Sachidulal, by taking up his message of chanting this holy name, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, we become a little bit qualified to try to understand Brajlila, because Brajlila is very difficult for most people to understand. They may want to come closer, because I was just spent the last 2 months in the between the sun, the sky, and the sand in Kumbh Mela. I almost wasn't going to come. You may want to move up. I mean, some of the guys can move up so that the ladies can come up a little closer also. So I made it all the way to the end, but then the last, it was starting to warm up. It suddenly got very hot one day, but in the morning time, it again became, I mean in the evening, it again became very, very cold. So that sudden change finished me off. So, in fact, I completely lost my voice altogether at one point. So we'll see. An original plan was that we were supposed to stop after the 29th was the Sant Panchami. That was the last big major snan where all the sadhus go in procession all day long. And after that, many camps packed up. But we were having such a good time preaching there. And so many people were begging us that we went to come on 8th. So we thought, all right, let's... Even after, like a week after we started, we realized, oh, let's go up to the 8th. It's so much fun. So actually, there was supposed to be a week or 10 days in between where I was supposed to rest and try to prepare for this class. So instead, we just went on preaching and preaching, and then that one day came where it started to warm up and it got cold again, and I had got a very serious case of bronchitis. And even I was at one point, I was just ready, I'm just going back to Vrindavan and lie down. And then somehow on the 8th, even I wasn't supposed to take bath, I just rode. We got permission to take our Didi carts, Pariyatra Didi carts. We went down to the Sangam. I just rode there, unable to chant or walk. Then I got there and thought, anyway, if I die sputtering and coughing in the Sangam, it's no problem. As soon as I took my bath, and my health began to return. Anyway, as a result of that, it's still not so good, and my voice is still not so strong. So you can hear in the back? All right. And I also haven't prepared anything. Although I'm always prepared to talk about Krishna. But still, I needed a little space there to rest. Yesterday I just slept all day, so I'm not feeling a little better today. But anyway, we were saying this Braj, first of all, Braj itself is very difficult to understand. As Prabhupada explains, that this Vrindavan that we see on the earth planet is non-different from that Golok Vrindavan in the spiritual sky. Which means that Vrindavan that we're seeing on earth planet is not the real Vrindavan. With our material eyes, we see some places there. But to actually see that Vrindavan, you have to see with the heart. But even still, that place there on the earth is so special. Even Prabhupada says, even if a materialistic person goes to that place, he will be moved by the atmosphere in Braj. And we have practical experience having stayed in Braj for so long, many times, many different tour groups come. Sometimes they go up to Taj Mahal, and somehow they've heard about our temple. So they stop there on the way back with people who really don't have anything to do with Krishna consciousness, but they're always moved by the atmosphere and grudge. So this place is non-different. It appears to be a spot on the map, a little dusty village, but it's, or a collection of villages, because sometimes when we say Vrindavan, we refer to the specific town that is now known as Vrindavan. But actually in Srimad Bhagavatam and in Krishna book, Prabhupada explains that Vrindavan refers to the forest that stretches from the now known town of Vrindavan, 32 miles up to Nandagram. It includes Govardhan and Govardhan Barsana and Radhakund. And then it's talked about 12 forests. So since Vrindavan is the largest and most famous, he becomes the representative for all the 12. We call the whole place Vrindavan. But if you come there, you'll find the Brajavasis, they call it Braj. All those 12 forests is known as Braj. So sometimes Vrindavan refers to that particular town, sometimes Vrindavan refers to the forest, sometimes Vrindavan refers to Braj. But the whole place is known as, actually is Braj. That's what we call Braj Mandal, Prithama. And that collection of small villages is non-different than that original Goloka Vrindavan in the spiritual sky. It's not possible to, although it appears like we can measure it, we call it Shirasi Coast, Prakama, 84 coasts, one coast is about 2 miles, so it appears like it can be measured. But just like we see in Brihad Bhagavata Mita, that our little Gop Kumar, he wanders back and forth from Golok to this Boma Vrindavan, he never sees any difference. He just wanders back and forth and he never knows whether he's in one or the other. So those who are very fortunate, they can see the non-difference. We ourselves are just like blind people just walking around in Braj, probably stumbling over desire trees and smashing Chintamani stones and doing so many things, just wandering around. But this Brajadham, Prabhupada, so many places he says is non-different than Goloka Vrindavan. He gives the example just like embassy. If we come here to India and commit some crime and the police are chasing us and we run into our embassy, then the police can't touch us. Then they have to go through so many, if there's some sort of extradition treaty, then they can, you know, appeal to the government, that particular government, to send you back to stand trial for that particular offense. But they can't go inside the embassy and touch you, because it's considered that land where the embassy is, that is your own country. That is not, now Indian law doesn't work there. So the same way, this Navadvipdham, this Brajadham, this Neelachal, these are all Krishna's embassies. Non-different from the original place. In fact, we can begin to just imagine. We hear in the, what is that, Brahma Samhita, it's so nice description that that is that wonderful land of Svetadvip, where the Supreme Lord and his beautiful consort are staying, and the consort attendant is the flute, every word is a song, every gate is a dance. What does it say? All the soil is Chintamani stones, all the trees are Kalpavriksha trees. There's only very few, the last line is only very few realized souls realize this place. Huh? They realize this. Only very few realize this place as Goloka Vrindavan. So that is the great fortune that we are all following behind such a rare realized soul who knew that place, who knows that place, Goloka Vrindavan. And if we sincerely follow Prabhupada's path and try to push on his mission sincerely, then we'll go back to that Golok. Just like in Kumbh Mela, we had our Jai Vijay, he made one beautiful road. He put all these little bricks, you know, at angles like this all along the sides, and then he put planted wheatgrass so that there'd be some, otherwise it was just sand, sky, and sun. There was nothing else. So he made a little greenery, and he put little, he took little wicker baskets and a little bamboo, you know, this little bamboo pole, stuck it in, nailed the wicker basket on top. He put the light bulb underneath, and we had a nice lighting system like that. It was very beautiful. So then we just put it, we had a little gateway into, that was into the residential part of the camp. So we had a little gate there. So then I thought, what to do? Everywhere we go, we see this was Nimbarka Nagar. Nagar means town. And this was Ramanuja Nagar. And sometimes I saw the road, Ramanuja Marg. You know, we were on Sankaracharya Marg. So I said, all right, this is our little road. So, I put a big sign, Prabhupada Marg. So we put a big, nice sign there. Srila Prabhupada Marg. So that's the point. If we follow the Srila Prabhupada Marg, this path chalked out by Srila Prabhupada, then we can actually go back to that Golok Vrindavan. And there's so many verses describing even the dust that we call Raj, Raj, Raj. Now ordinarily we're not interested in dust. We're interested to get it out of the house, you know, get rid of it. But this dust of Raj is described that even if you take all the opulence of Vaikuntha, you can't buy one grain of this dust of Raj. You can't buy one grain, even with all the opulence of Vaikuntha. Because this Raj is so special. Because when Krishna was in Raj, he was also Lala, a little boy. And he was wandering around barefoot. When he went to Mathura and Dwarka, then he became prince and king. Has anybody ever saw a prince and king come outside without shoes? Anybody's coming from England? Is anyone from England here? No one from England. Anybody come from some place where there's a kingdom? But anyway, you can't imagine that the prince or king will come outside without shoes. So even Sanatana Goswami says, even in Vaikunth, Lord is wearing slippers. Like that. So this is the glory of Braj. Lala was wandering all around this Braj with barefoot. So that dust is mixed with the dust from his lotus feet. It was touched. That's why when we go on Braj Prakrama, we like to go also barefoot. That somehow maybe one little speck of dust is still there that was touched by Krishna's lotus feet. And then many specks are still there. We hope that they will touch us somehow, or they touch our body and purify us. So we like to wander around barefoot. Just to show you the glory of this dust, as we know one time, we know that pastime where Brahma stole all the cows and calves, because even Brahma couldn't understand. We're talking about how it's difficult to understand Braj and Braj Leela. Even Brahma couldn't understand. He's the creator. He's a big shot in this whole universe. even he knew, he said, this is the time, he understood, this is the time and the place for the incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But he came down, and what did he see? He saw Krishna was sitting there with all his friends, just like this little circle, just like we're sitting here. And Krishna took a bite of his sweet, and he passed it to his friend and said, hey, just see what nice sweet my mother Yasoda gave for me. Like that. And he took a bite out of another one, gave it to another boy. Like that. The other boy, he picked up his sweet, he took a bite. No, Lala, you just see what, oh, Kana, you just see what nice sweet my mother gave me. Like that. So, I don't know, in Vrindavan we used to have one course on Vaishnava Achara. Vaishnava behavior. So I don't think they teach this, that you take a bite of something, you hand it to your friend. We're taught opposite. This is not a good thing to do. That you take a bite and you give something to someone else. This is, even in ordinary mundane cultures, is not considered, they don't the outside Western world they don't consider so much, but especially in Vaishnava culture, this is, you don't bite something and hand it to someone. And what to speak of biting something and handing it to the Lord? If you came in and you found your pujari in your temple, if you're eating all the sweets before they're offered to the Lord, you know, you'll take a stick and beat him right out of the temple. So therefore Brahma, he was totally confused. What is going on here? This is totally amazing. How is it possible that this is, he's acting like this, and this is supposed to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead? So he got some doubt. So he stole all the cowherd boys and calves. And suddenly when they didn't see, well, first he stole all the calves, and suddenly when the boys didn't see their calves, they became upset, and Lala said, don't worry, you just stay here, I'll go look for them. Do we do like that? Suppose you're sitting with your spiritual master, and he says, oh, where's so-and-so? Huh? Then what do? You get up, I'll go find him, Maharaj. Huh? Isn't it? We don't say, oh, Maharaj, go find him. Or Maharaj gets up to go find him. No, no, we'll all say, no, no. But Lala, he got up, he said, don't, but you keep on eating, I will go find him. Huh? He said, you just stay here and eat. Don't bother yourselves, I will go find Krishna then. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But he told all his friends, you just stay here, I'll go. Don't bother yourselves, I will go find him. He went to look, and then Brahma took the opportunity when he was gone, he stole all the cowherd boys also. So that time, Lala came back, he looked around, he didn't see the calves, now he doesn't see the cowherd boys either. He thought, well, if I go home, I'm going to get in big trouble. And where's all the calves and where's all the cowherd boys? So he thought Mother Yasoda was really, I'll get in trouble with everyone, not just Mother Yasoda. So then he expanded himself as all the cows and all the, excuse me, all the calves and cowherd boys, exactly whatever cloth they were wearing, whatever habits they had, whatever speech they had, everything exactly the same, same with all the calves. He did that for 1 year. So we know calves after some time, they eventually get some taste for grass. Usually they're just sucking some milk from the mother, but eventually they get taste for grass. So that means after 1 year, these calves, this Brajadam is so wonderful place that Lord himself became a calf and was eating the grass in this place. And now if you eat grass, you see how it's not like they take it to the water faucet, just like in there in Kumbh Mela, they put all this to make the green, this Jai Dai, he put wheatgrass there, you know. He grew wheat, you know, so he had looked like grass, you know, came up. We're supposed to put barley later, comes up in 3 days of wheat, but by the end it came up. But anyway, so all this wheat grass was there. So I was plucking off all the tips and I would take it and go and wash it very well and make sure there's no sand. We already ate at least a kilo of sand all by ourselves, not adding to it. So not that the calves are going to, they chop off the grass and they go wash it somewhere. They just eat it. I mean, some dirt is also going to come. Huh? If somebody sees the calf and cow, they just tear the grass right out of the ground. I mean, on the roots, so much dirt is there. So Krishna himself was eating the dust of this bed. Because we saw there's so many places. Even you go to Chitrakoot, which is just nearby. Everybody went to Kumbh Mela and they all went to Chitrakoot. Their Lord was also in the forest wandering around barefoot. The many places are there. If we study, we'll find so many places where Lord was walking barefoot and touching that dust with his foot. But we cannot find any place except this Brajadam where Lord was eating that dust. Many places there where he touched the dust. He was walking barefoot in so many places. In Chitrakoot and Dandakaranya, so many places he was touching the dust with his foot. Huh? And we see in so many places Lord was touching with his. But this is the only place Lord is eating the dust. Even later, as we know that pastime at Brahmandagar, where he was eating the clay directly as a little boy. So this place, you just try to understand how wonderful this Brajadam is. It's such a wonderful place that even Lord himself was eating the grass and dust of this place. The Supreme Personality of Godhead himself was eating the grass and dust of this place. So we can never think of Brajadam as being ordinary place, a part of this material world. We can't, it's beyond any of our material estimations or conceptions. It is filled with desire trees. It's like that nice verse to sing, every tree is a desire tree. Like Prabhupada says, you know, we in this material world, a tree can give only that particular type of fruit that it gives, and only a particular amount. But these desire trees, they can get any type of fruit and anything, any amount of fruit desired by the devotee. Like I said, every word is a song. Sometimes we've met some, just like at the tail end of Govardhan, there's one, he's almost 100-year-old Gaudiya Sadhu named Jagannath Baba. And when he talks, everything is just a song. And he comes to see him, he says, don't take rain on a karasi. Don't even feed it to the cow or the dog. He always likes to talk about a karasi. But every word is always a song. Of course, there's no question of dance for him. He doesn't even walk anymore. He's so old he can't walk. But this is Brajadam, where everything is, every word is a song, every gate is a dance. Chintamani Dham is like our Padmalochan. Just on the way here, I was very happy. Somehow it was Krishna's arrangement, I guess. Just as I started walking, then there was Padmalochan coming down the path on his bicycle. At first I seen him different. Who is this? I can't recognize. Then I got close, I thought it was Padmalochan. So he was my first person who introduced me to Braj. And he wrote this beautiful book, Chintamani Dham, which is still, I mean, so many people have written books about Braj Prakrama, but I still like Chintamani Dham. So that was my first introduction. I was very happy that on the way here to class, the first person I ran into was Padmalochan. So this is Chintamani Dham. One speck is worth all the opulence of. We can't even begin to imagine what is the opulence of Vaikuntha. With all that opulence, you can't buy one grain. We don't have any appreciation. We saw, Prabhupada says, the proper way to enter Vrindavan is just like a crow. As soon as he came and he saw Krishna's footprints in the dust, he got down from his chariot. He's riding on a big chariot. He was a big guy in Mathura, you know, minister and Kamsa had sent him. Just without regards to his position or his clothing or anything, you know, we're always worried. We sit down in the dust and then we get up and immediately go, like this. This is not permitted on Braj Prakrama, actually. You sit in the dust and then you don't get up and start brushing it away. Like that, we're worried. Like that, but Akur, he just got down without regards to his position or prestige or clothing, he just rolled in that dust of Braj. So Prabhupada, this is a proper way to enter Vrindavan. You just give up your all thoughts of false prestige and all of these, whatever you think, and just roll in that dust. This is the proper way to enter Vrajadam. So there's a very special place. If you go on and on and on, the glories are unlimited. And we know that was the desire of Lord Chaitanya also, Nimai. As soon as he took sannyas, and his first desire was, now I want to go to Vrindavan. Then we know somehow or other Nityananda tricked him and took him to the Vaita Prabhu's house. And he was very surprised because he saw some river, they told him that's Jamuna. Next thing you know, he saw Vaita. He said, Vaita Prabhu, how did you get here to Vrindavan? Then he realized everything was trick of Nityananda, and they went to Vaita Prabhu's house. And then somehow his mother begged him, please don't go to Vrindavan, that's far away. If you go to Puri, then sometimes devotees are always going back and forth. Even now, there's a close relationship between Bengal and Orissa, Puri and Navadvip. At least sometime we'll get some news. So he stayed there in Puri. Otherwise, if he would have stayed in Vrindavan, then, as we saw, when Mahaprabhu visited Vrindavan, he was just Chaitanya Charitamrita describes, just be any other place, just the word Vrindavan was enough to increase his ecstasy thousands of times. But actually being in Vrindavan, his ecstasy increased millions of times. He was practically, in fact, towards the end, the devotees thought, we have to get him out of this place, otherwise we don't know what's going to happen. So if he would have stayed, that's why he stayed in Puri. If he would have stayed in Vrindavan, he would have, you know, he was in the ecstasy of devotee. And there he would have completely manifested his Krishna Krishnaism, something, I don't know. That he stayed in Puri, otherwise he never would have been able to maintain. He was so ecstatic in Praj. So we'll start our Braj Sikkim in the same place when Mahaprabhu first came, after he passing Kashi, then he went along the, he came to Allahabad, then he went along the banks of the Jamuna, and every time he saw Jamuna, he was sometimes threw himself in the Jamuna and lost consciousness. It was very difficult for Balabhadra, who was accompanying him, to maintain him. Every time they would, on the path, would come near the Jamuna, he would just throw himself in the Jamuna. So finally entered Mathura. So Mahaprabhu, first place he visited was Mathura. That is the place of Lord's appearance. So that is a good place to begin. Mahaprabhu also began his Parikrama of Braj from Mathura. So we'll also start from that land of Mathura. Mahaprabhu first came to Vishramghat. You know Vishram? Resting. Just like we know in Bhagavatam, one verse is there. What is it? Srama eva hi kevalam. That even if you follow all the rules and regulations of Vanashram Dharma, but you don't develop any affection for Krishna, then it is just Srama eva hi kevalam. It is only useless labor. Only useless labor. Srama eva hi kevalam. So sram means to work very hard. And after one's tired of working very hard, then he does vishram. First we do sram, then we do vishram. So this Vishram Ghat actually has very, very old history. We're going to talk about how Krishna rested there, but even before, when this Lord Varaha lifted up the earthly planet from the bottom of the Garbhodak ocean and fought with Hiranyaksha, then he lay down and rested, Vishram. That was also Shram. He had to fight with this big demon. Kaodin. Then he also did Vishram at that place. This is old Tirth. Mathura city is very, very ancient city. It's mentioned in many places. Even our Lord Varaha, he took rest in that Vishram. And then after, because that's the end of Rajasthan, after Krishna killed Kamsa, then he and Balaram, because, you know, they had a big fight, so they killed that Kuvalyapita and they ripped out his tusk, you know, so it said that blood was sprinkled everywhere. Then they fought with these wrestlers, then he finally smashed Kamsa, so they were all a little bit bloody. So they went down to Jamuna, took their bath, and they were also tired, so then they did Vishram. They took rest there at that place. So that has become known as Vishram Ghat. Just like we were in the last day of, almost the last day we were there in Kumbh. Our little friend Sanak Sanatan from Pariyatra, who was our vice president for Kumbh Mela, his parents-in-laws came from Maharashtra. So we went to see another ghat. What was that? Das Ashrami ghat. So on the way back from Braj and Mahaprabhu, he stopped at Allahabad because they heard that his Magh Mela is going on. Every year there's Magh Mela. Every 12 years it becomes Kumbh Mela. But every year in that January, February, Magh Mela is going. So it was Magh Mela time. It wasn't Kumbh Mela. It was Magh Mela time. Mahaprabhu came there and instructed Rupa Goswami. And then behind there he took darshan of this Veni Madhav temple. So we thought, all right, let's go to the Gaudiya Math, because everyone told us that this Gaudiya Math, this is a place where we all know that Prabhupada took Diksha from Srila Bhakti Siddhanta in Allahabad. So we figured where the Gaudiya Math is, that must be the place, because he went to the temple and he took Diksha. So we were there, and this young boy walked up, and he said, 3 or 4 days ago on TV, we saw this fellow sitting in a boat in front of Vishram Ghat talking about Mathura. Was that you? Because our godbrother Haridas in Bombay, he's got another version of ITV where he makes these films of different devotees giving lectures, and he gets it on TV somehow or other. So he also came to Braj one time. And he grabbed me, and we went out in a boat in front of Vishram Ghat, and we talked about Jamuna and Vishram Ghat and Mathura and so many things. We went to Radhakund, we went to Govardhan. Because every once in a while it comes on TV, so this boy saw, oh, wasn't that you who was sitting in the boat talking? Yeah, that was me. So then we were talking with him, and somehow we mentioned something about Prabhupada taking Diksha. He said, no, not here. Before they had a rented house. I said, well, it says 1930. Yeah, 1931. Those deities were established in that rented house in 1930, because it says, there's a big plaque there, it says 1931, these deities were established in 34, the temple was renovated, in 79, somebody else renovated, and now in Kartik of 2000, just a few months before, it was renovated. Very beautiful. You see these beautiful domes, it's so sweet. Very nice from outside, it's very, very nice. And just on the edge of the Mela, as soon as you get out of the Mela area, then you see these big domes there. So he said, yeah, no, in 31 it was in a rented house, in 34 Bhaktisiddhanta re-established them here. 33 was when Prabhupada was initiated. So 31 had the temple was at another place in 33. In 34, he said, no, that's when this the deities were established for a second time. I said, so where is that other place? Immediately began the question. This question had been going around and around the whole time we were there at Kumbh Mela. Was, is this the place or not the place? So we heard some rumor that it was another place. Another boy told us, no, it's another place. And he told us, you go near the city station, there's a Hanuman temple, and there's a place called South Malacca. If you want to write it down, South Malacca. I don't know how to spell it, just what it sounds like. When you get to South Malacca, there's a Hanuman temple, then you go straight. He said there's a little park, and opposite the park there's a homeopathic shop. The homeopathic shops are not so many in India. Ayurvedic shops are there, allopathic shops are there, but homeopathic is very rare, so it's easy to find it. So then we went up the street, and sure enough we saw on the right side there was a little park, on the left side we saw this homeopathic shop. It was quite late, it was dark, the house was dark, it looked like old, you know, from a different era, it had the different types. You know, now houses are just very plain, you know, it just had little decorations, maybe some angels or something with a little circle over the doorway, and, you know, one of these types of doorways like this, you know, very stately, and I mean, it looked like this was, in its day, probably a very, very fancy, respectable house, you know. Now it's just in a dark little corner of Allahabad. So we parked the car, we got out, and we read the Hindi, and it said, Dr. Ishtadev Banerjee. So we were laughing because although Sanak Sanatan is the overall in charge, the actual, who actually travels with Padayatra is Ishtadev Prabhu. So we said, Dr. Ishtadev Banerjee. So then we were laughing, you know, because Ishtadev's name came. So we went in the shop, his son was there, So we were talking with his son for a while, and all of a sudden this very stately, grandfatherly, jolly little Bengali gentleman walked in. And he was very, very happy to see us. And he began talking, and he was saying, no, this where they have their shop now. He said, this is the room where your Prabhupada took his oath. You know, this is the room. I was just a little boy at that time. He said, my father knows all these things. So I was this little boy that I saw in this room. Because Maharaj was staying here, and then he pointed on the other side of the park. He said, yellow building, all brahmacharis were staying there. But Maharaj was staying here in this room. He, Prabhupada took oath. And next room, he said, you come. And he told, took us into his, now it's his bedroom. And next to the bed, there was, looked like a false fireplace, where he put some little deity of Saraswati. He said, I brought this from Calcutta 40 years ago. Just made it. He said, but this place, Radha Krishna and Mahaprabhu were standing on this place. Yeah, this was a temple. And very, it was all very small. I can't imagine. It was very small, you know, his bedroom was quite small, but there's this little place. He said, this is Lord was staying here. Outside there, Prabhupada, in this small little room, Prabhupada took his oath. And then in 1934, he said, I remember there was only 5 cars in the whole of Allahabad. So by bullet cart, so again we're laughing because we were thinking yesterday's and Padayatra and the bullet cart. And he said, the deities, he took deities by bullet cart. He said, that I was only a young boy, I knew. And Allahabad at that time, only four or five cars in the whole of Allahabad. So by bullet cart, he took these deities to that new place. In 1934, he took them. So, the Spisham Ghat also somehow managed to get us to see because it all started from Bishamgad, when the boy said, I saw you on the boat from the Bishamgad. So Mahaprabhu, when he came, first place he went was to that Bishamgad and took his bath. And now there's, I think it was the king of Kashi, there's a big archway there with so many bells, big colorful little arch like that with so many bells hanging down. And it's all a little crowded place now. All the little temples are there. And brother and sister temple is there. Because this is on bank of Jamuna. In fact, Jamuna, she flows just like a crescent moon all around Mathura. Because Mathura is so dear to her. So she's like giving embrace. She's just flowing like that around Mathura, then she goes off to go cool. So every day in the evening, just after the sun, there's no specific time. It's when the stars appear in the sky. When as soon as you can see star appear in the sky. Just at that point, when the stars appear in the sky, then they do arti to Jamuna at that place. Then all those bells, they have all those bells ringing, they have big, you know, it must be 108 wicks or something like that, a whole bunch like this, and several different tiers, you know. Big ghee lamp, you know, with several, all made of silver, you know. The old pujari comes out with big belly, you know. Everybody's singing and all the bells, ding, 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 ding. All bells are ringing. They do this beautiful arti to Jamuna there. Every evening, just as the stars appear in the sky. So following Mahaprabhu, we all take first our bath there at Vishramghat before we start our prakrama. Mahaprabhu actually, he bathes. On the northern side, there's 12 ghats. And on the southern side, there's 12 ghats. So in all the 24, actually 25 ghats, the Sram ghat, then the 24 other ghats, Mahaprabhu took his bath in all of those places. And all of them are still there. Then, just near the Sram ghat, there's one of the Digpal deities. Just like here we go to Chaitanya Math, and we'll see or we go to Yogpit, excuse me, then we'll see just behind the little hut of Satyamata and Jagannath Mitra, there's also Shiva Devi, who's Kshetrapal Mahadev. So same thing in Braj also. Braj has got five special, but Mathura itself also has four special Digpal Devi. Dig means, Dig is direction. So they protect the four directions of Mathura as well as the four directions of Braj. But right near the Visram Ghat, there's Pipaleswar Mahadev. He looks like almost any other Shivaling, but in the evening they put this brass head on top. Very beautiful, big mustache like this, and beautiful flower decoration. So this is Pipaleswar Mahadev, who protects, especially the southern direction of, no, eastern, must be eastern, because the sun is coming up across the Jamuna, it's the eastern side of Mathura. Then if we wander way down, because that will come at the end, let's go the other way. Then just behind this Ramgat, there's a huge temple that a lot of people give a lot of importance to, but it doesn't really have so much importance. There's Dwarkadish temple. So Dwarka, that's another lila altogether, has no place in Braj. But anyway, the local people, some merchants have built this huge temple, so it's a huge temple, so it gets a lot of importance. But it's a recent thing. But beside that Dwarkadish temple, on the right side, when you're facing the entrance door, on the right side there's a little road, and you go up that road, three or four little intersections, very narrow little lanes, then you turn right, and first you'll come to Swet Braha temple. Swet means white. Now don't try to go in there because they're very puffed up. They'll just chastise you. And of course, if you're Indian, you can go in. There's no problem. But if you have white skin, don't try to go in. They'll just insult you and make so many problems for you. But if you continue past Swet Braha, then it makes a turn and the road ends at Lal Braha. Lal means red. And there, the Brahmins are very, very gentle, and they're very happy to see the Western devotees come, and they welcome us, and they'll have you come up onto the raised platform in front of Didi and get darshan of this Lord Braha. Now this Lord Braha Didi, you'll be told this place is where Lord Braha also took rest, so this Braha Didi is there. But how he got there is very interesting, and there's a book there where this story was told by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta and signed by him, the pujari, he keeps this book. That way back, I think, must have been Treta Yuga, or maybe even before. Maybe it was, must have been Satya Yuga, actually. When the earth fell in the bottom of the Garbhodak ocean, and then everybody went to Brahma, and while Brahma was considering what to do, boom, a little boar popped out of his nostril. So he couldn't have been any much bigger than a fingertip, you know, because fingertips are about the only thing you can get inside your nostril. Suddenly became very huge, and he made some sort of transcendental sound vibration. Or he made a sound vibration, but the sages and devotees could recognize it as transcendental, because ordinarily sound that made by boar is not so pleasing. But sound made by Lord was very pleasing, and everyone began chanting Vedic hymns hearing the sound made by the Lord. So we know that story. So then Lord Brahma, he was fascinated seeing this form of the Lord, so he had one deity made. And the interesting thing is this deity is made by the engineer of the universe. So there you will see Lord Braha and his tusk, and sitting on top of his tusk is a round plate, not a globe. Mandal means, you know, like a round. This is Bhu Mandal. And then you'll see that there's different mountain ranges, just like we read all about in the Loka Loka mountain range and the whatever it is, Manasotra mountain range, where the sun is, sun god is running around with his horses, and so you can see it. This is made by the original engineer of the universe. So this is Lord Brahma, and it's flat, you know, with some big tall mountains on top. And Pujari is a very sweet there. And he's sort of reddish color, so he's become known as Lal Brahma. So anyway, Lord Brahma was worshipping this deity. He later gave it to Kubera. And Kubera was worshipping this deity, but one time in Treta Yuga, this Lord Ravan, this Ravan, he became very powerful. So he was bothering all the demigods, so he also stole this. He attacked Kubera and stole this deity from Kubera and brought it with him to Lanka, where he was also worshipping this deity of Lord Brahma. Because actually, Ravan was a Brahmin. Even though he was a demon, he was a Brahmin. He's also sometimes known as Mahapandit. He was very, very, even in this Madhurya Kadambini, Viswanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions that Ravan was, and he mentions some other, they were Brahmins, but nobody appreciates their, although they were very learned. He explains that Ravan was a very learned fellow, but because of his behavior, all his being a Brahmin is not appreciated or recognized by anyone. He's not appreciated at all, which is in line with, because we won't come there in this class, but when you get to Kamivan, you'll find Dharmakund, which is where the Yaksha Prashna took place, where Yudhisthira was, we know they were all thirsty, and he sent Nakul to go find water. He climbed a tree. He said, well, there's some trees over there, like there's some water. So then Nakul didn't come back, so he sent Sahadev. Sahadev didn't come back. He sent Arjun. Arjun didn't come back. He sent Bhima. Then finally Yudhisthira himself went there. He saw all his brothers were dead. Even though he saw dead, he was so thirsty, he just rushed. He just didn't ignore his dead brothers and just rushed to the water. Just see this thirst and hunger. They're such powerful things. Even he saw the dead brothers are lying there, he just ran to the water to drink. So powerful this thing. So as soon as he got to the water, a voice said, don't drink this water or you'll end up just like your brothers. So all of them had heard the same voice, and they just ignored it and drank the water and died. But Yudhisthira, he heard, it's all right, but I can't talk to a voice. Show yourself. So this yaksha, whatever yaksha is, a yaksha appeared and began to ask questions. Question means prashna. So this whole chapter of Mahabharata became yaksha prashna. So we all know the famous question, kimascharjam, what is the most amazing, what is the most wonderful thing? And we know that answer. But one of the questions he gave, this question was multiple choice question. Some were yes and no, some he had to give the answer, and some were multiple choice. So he gave multiple choice question. He said, how do we know who is a Brahmin? By his learning, by his scholarship, first he said by his birth, by his learning, by his knowledge of books, or by his behavior. Multiple choice, A, B, or C, D. So Yudhisthira Maharaj said, well, not necessarily by birth. We see many people born in Brahmin families, but not at all behaving like Brahmins. Just like when I first joined, we used to go down, they sent me to LA to get trained up. So we used to go down on Sunset Boulevard. There was a place called Diamond Jim's restaurant. And people used to pay like $100 just to eat a dead piece of a cow and drink some rotten grains, that the essence of rottenness had been distilled out of.
and pay $100 or $200 to do that. Well, sometimes we'd be chanting there and somebody would come outside, you know, because obviously it was Indian, you know, so we'd offer them a ghee. They'd say, no, I'm from India, I know everything. You know, and they said, see, I'm also Brahmin. See? So just birth doesn't make one Brahmin. So then he said, by his learning or knowledge of books, he said, sometimes we see people have, they're very learned or they have a lot of knowledge of books, but they become very, very puffed up. So there's so many stories in the lives of the acharyas, just like Rama, I think it was Ramanujacharya, or maybe it was before him. It was Yamunacharya. His guru was very sad one day. He said, what's the matter? He said, well, I was defeated by this Brahmin in the king's court, and if I don't pay some money, you know, then they're going to kill me, and I have no money, and I don't know what to do. So the Yamunacharya went there. So this guy was very puffed up because he defeated so many Brahmins, and they all had to give all their wealth to him, you know, because that was his thing. So he became very... So he went there, and this young Yamunacharya was just a young boy, so he challenged him, and he was so puffed. Who's this little boy? How can you challenge him? No, the king said, all right, he's challenging you, you have to accept the challenge. So the young boy picked up some sand and said, tell me how many grains of sand are in my hand. Then the Brahmin became very, he just began, just see, he just, you know, he's just cheating me like this, you know. He's just impudent. This guy should be killed. This guru should also be killed. And the king said, wait a minute. You can't give the answer. Maybe he can give the answer. Before you kill him, first he challenged you. You can't give the answer. Now, if he can't give the answer, then he's defeated. So then they asked the little boy, how many grains of sand are in your hand? He said, a handful. And the king says, he's defeated you. So he was, and then of course, who was it? I guess that was Ramanuja himself. What was that one where? No, that was one of the Avars. What was his name before Ramanuja? Because his name means he's defeated. What was his name? One of the Alvars. Anyway, what happened was similar type of thing. So the young boy came. He was upset that his teacher was being insulted like this. This is probably Yamunacharya's guru. I can't remember name now. I have to go back and look in my computer. I have this story somewhere. I just read a report. They're saying people are losing their memory because of computers now. So, anyway, so the young boy, he went there to challenge the court pundit, you know, who's very arrogant and proud. He said, "Who's this little boy?" He said, "No, let him, you know, challenge." So then the young boy said, "It's all right. So you have four questions you can challenge on." He said. So the first thing the boy said was, your mother was not a barren woman. So the pundit, he thought for a second. Huh? No, because it was, because his name was... No, because when we get to the end, the queen said his name and he became known as that, by that name. Anyway, so the pundit, he became very upset. Just see this rascal. Just see, you know, how can, you know, I'm here. My mother was there. So how come, you know, how can I defeat this that my mother was not a barren woman? And the king says, wait a minute. Well, let him defeat it. And then he quoted some verse from the scripture that if a woman only has one child, she's considered barren. Nowadays they're trying that they only have, they don't even want to have any, but just because... If most two, our two, we two, you see in all those rickshaws, you know. But previous people were not worried like this, because Krishna is taking care of everyone. You can have as many children as you like, Krishna will provide for everyone. So it was considered, if a woman had one child, she was considered barren. He quoted this sastra. So, second thing was, I guess it was three questions. Our king is a very pious man. So then the Pandit began, now he wants me to insult you. If I say that our king is, you know, a demon, then you know he's just tricking. No. Then you let him give the answer. He said our king, he may be very pious, but the king has to take 1/6 of all the simple reactions of his citizens. So even though our king is very pious, he's still got all this 1/6 karma from all of his citizens. So now the pundit's really angry. So then I said, what's your third argument? He said, our queen is most chaste. Now just see, he's going to make me say the queen is unchaste. I said, wait a minute. Let him give the queen said, all right, I want to hear his answer. The queen said, wait. He said, the king, he's a representative of 5 different demigods. He named Indra, Agni, I can't remember. He's representative of 5 different demigods. So our queen, she's associating with 5 different husbands. So we cannot say that she's chaste. So then she said, you know, he's defeated. Whatever that word was, he became known as that Alvar. May have been Natamuni, but he also was known by this. What was the name? I can't remember now. But she said, he's been defeated. And that was his name became, he's been defeated. So, anyway, the point is that sometimes people with great learning, they become very puffed up and very proud and angry. And just like we were originally giving the example of Ravan, I remember, because we're talking about Kumbh Mela, in Ujjain Kumbh Mela, somehow or other right near the bathing place, there was a cold drink stand, and a big sign on top, Maha Pandit Ravan Cold Drinks. So he was also a Maha Pandit, but still... So he kicked off those. So then Yudhishthira Maharaj said, so by his behavior, answer number A, B, C, D, multiple choice, he said D, by his behavior. So this is how we tell Brahman. So how did we get here? Somehow we were at... Yeah, I know, but that... Yeah, well, that was it. But how did we get to that story? Ravana, all right, Ravana. All right, that's how we got there. All right, so then Lord Ram, he defeated Ravan, so he brought that Brahadidi back to Ayodhya, and he worshipped him there in Ayodhya for some time. And then some sages came from Vrindavan, and they were saying that this fellow is just one asura, is there Lavanasura, he's bothering us like anything. So then Shatrughan told Lord Ram that you've already, for 14 years, you're wandering around and fighting so many demons. Now you just stay here in Ayodhya, don't bother. I will go take care of this one for you. But one thing, you give me that Brahadidi, because I know if I take that Brahadidi, I'll be assured of success. So he took that Brahadidi and he established him in Mathura. And after killing that demon, he made Mathura his capital. This is straight to you. Mathura is a very ancient place. So that same deity is coming down from Satyu, Tretyu, like that same deity is there. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta signed in the book. He told this story and signed this in the book. This is most amazing. deity. Very ancient deity. Then, nearby there is Dirga Vishnu. Because when Krishna came back to Mathura, then all his relatives were very worried, you know, because Kamsa was there, Chanura Mustika, all these big guys were there. So they were all in anxiety. So Krishna manifested this form, Dirga. Just like you all heard of Brihad Bhagavatamrita, and also there's Rupa Goswami's Laghu Bhagavatamrita. So Brihad or Dirga are similar. When you say something is big, it's Dirga. When something's small, it's Laghu. That's why Laghu is short. This Brihad Bhagavatamrita is a long one, and this Laghu. So Brihad or Dirga. So this Dirga Vishnu form, this is a great big Vishnu form that Krishna manifested just so his parents wouldn't be upset. And then, of course, we come to the... Well, as we're coming from Visramghat, then we'll come to... Rangbhumi. Just a little ways down the street from Keshav Gaudiya Math is Rang. Rang means the arena for doing fighting. So this was a wrestling arena. This is where Krishna killed all the wrestlers. Krishna Balaram killed all the wrestlers and the Kubalya Pita elephant. Finally they killed Kamsa and all his brothers. So this place is there. And just by that is, that must be the southern Digpal deity is Rangeshwar Mahadev is there. Rangeshwar, another nice deity of Lord Shiva is there. Rangeshwar Mahadev. Just near there. Then after that, down the street is Janmastan, the place where Krishna makes his appearance. So that is interesting history. There used to be a huge temple was built there. Later, I can't remember, some Muslim came. He wrote in his book, he said it looked like, you know, thousands of people worked for 200 years to build this temple, then he smashed it and built a mosque. Then they smashed the mosque and built a temple. Then Aurangzeb came and he smashed the temple and built a mosque. So that mosque is still there. But next to it, they built a great, big, beautiful temple. And as you come up on the front wall, all around they have different slokas, but there's one verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. They give the Sanskrit, and then they give the translation straight from Prabhupada's books that the devotees of the Lord, they don't take pleasure in any place, even if it is a place of pilgrimage, where there is no, right on the, as you walk up the steps, you know, you see this slok from Srimad Bhagavatam with the translation straight from Prabhupada's books. A huge temple is there. So this is the, of course, the actual place, I mean, it marks the area. But many of the old sadhus and old guides, and most of those sadhus now are disappearing quickly. But just behind there, there's a huge tank with no water in it. I mean, it's a huge kund. I mean, it just goes down. And they never, maybe in rainy season there's some water there, but it's called Potra Kund. So we know Potra is very, almost sounds like Putra. And just beside it, there's a little gully. And all the old sadhus and old guys have told me that is the actual place where Krishna appeared. You see, there's a broken down temple there. There's, you know, some feet of Vasudev Devaki, and in between, some small feet of Keshavdev. And they say there's, you know, you know, it was a family piece of property and it's broken up into so many descendants and so many descendants. They're all fighting with one another, so nothing ever develops there. So, but they've told that is the actual spot. But anyway, that temple is in the same area. Just like when you're in Delhi, you say, well, Mathura is a place of Krishna's birth, you know. When you get to Mathura, he says, well, over there, is the Dhammasthan, you know, and when you get there, you know, then if you go, so that temple is there near the Dhammasthan. I mean, after 5,000 years, who can really say? But all the old sadhus have told me that little tiny place behind, because they said this Putrakun was after Devaki gave birth, and she would go and take her bath in that kund. So it's right next door, so it sort of makes sense. But this is also very, this is how Krishna book actually starts, with this whole story of Kamsa riding with his sister Devaki in the chariot. And the interesting thing is, because sometimes one may wonder, well, even Kamsa is a very interesting history of Kamsa also, the how this Maharaj Ugrasen got such a, he was such a pious king, how he got such a horrible son. But in the Puranas it describes at one time Maharaj Ugrasen's wife was wandering in a garden, and some daitya was passing by, and he was smitten with the beauty of Ugrasen's wife, the queen. So he made himself look just like, he was a very powerful daitya, so he made himself take the form of Maharaj Ugrasen, and then he entered into the garden. So as a result, this Kamsa was born. So real father of Kamsa is not actually Ugrasen. This is one interesting thing. And Devaki is not his real sister, because she's the daughter of Maharaj Devak. But because Ugrasen didn't have any daughter, then this Devak gave his daughter over to Ugrasen. That's why she's called Devaki, because she's the daughter of Devak. So she's not the real, but like sister. As you see in India, everybody's always, this is my brother. So, this is your brother. And he's also my brother. And then you find, how many brothers? Well, actually, there's only two brothers, but this is my cousin brother, and this is my other cousin brother. And everyone is brother, so, and sister like that. So Kamsa and Devaki, they're brother and sister. So, we know this Kamsa, he was so, such a demon, he threw his own father in prison, Ugrasen, and usurped the kingdom. And of course, he was very clever, so he arranged the marriage of, because he knew Vasudeva was the only person who could possibly get enough, who was powerful enough to get enough people together to challenge him. So he got Vasudeva married with his sister. So then how can he kill his brother-in-law? It's not proper, you know. Kamsa was a very clever fellow, you know. So he arranged all this thing like so then we know the voice came in the sky the Kans, you fool, the eighth child of your sister is going to kill you. The Atma Lal Tera Kal, this eighth child is going to kill you. So then we know Kamsa was ready somehow, that he just took his sword, he was ready to kill his own sister. He's such a demon. I mean, just imagine. And somehow Vasudeva, in so many ways, he just tried to give so many examples to him. And then finally he just said, alright, let me save Devaki's life. In the future, then I'll see what to do about the children. He said, anyway, there's no fear from Devaki. It's from the children, and who knows, maybe children may not be children, maybe sons may not be sons, who knows. He gave so many arguments, and finally comes, because he knew the word of Vasudeva, and even if a child is born, I'll bring to you, then you can decide what to do. So it says that, you know, saintly person, his word is, you know, can always be trusted, and a simple person, his word can never be trusted. So he knew Vasudeva, if he says this, he'll do it. So we can just imagine the scene. Vasudeva and Devaki had a child, and then Vasudeva is taking that newborn child from Devaki, and to take it to Kamsa, and she knows she may never see that child again. Just imagine the scene. How valiant, we don't know, these type of noble people, they don't walk on the earth anymore. He was so noble to his word. You can just imagine Devaki there pleading and crying, please don't take me, because she knows him, she may never see him. And somehow comes, he saw that child. They thought, anyway, it's eighth child I have to worry about. His heart got a little changed, seeing how this noble this character is. He's all right. You take this one back. Don't worry. So then all the demigods got upset, because then, as long as this Kamsa will perform some really terrible activities, then certainly the Lord will appear. So they sent Narad Muni. So Narad Muni went there and he took Kamsa to the forest, to a secret place, and he said, "Look, we heard. Have you heard that all the demigods are taking birth in the Yadu dynasty? Not only that, you know, you can't trust these demigods, you know. How do you know which way they count? You know, the voice said the eighth child, but these demigods are pretty tricky fellows, you know. Maybe they count, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, like we count. But maybe they count the other way around, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So the first one would be the eighth, you know. Or maybe they start from here, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, you know. Or maybe they start from here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, you know. You don't know. These guys are tricky fellows, you know. Because Narad Muni wanted to speed things up. So then comes he, again through Vasudeva and Devi, because nobody can trust him. This person who's addicted to sanskara can't be trusted. Vasudeva's word was as good as gold, and Kamsa was as good as dust. Nearly threw them in jail and grabbed that child right in, just a demon. We can't imagine such a demon right in front of the mother. He just smashed that child on a stone. We can't even, don't even like to imagine such a horrible demon. And every child like that. And finally then, well, first there was six childs. Now, these six children is very interesting. Because originally, they were the sons of one Brahmin named Marichi. And that time when, we know one time, Lord Brahma, he went running after his daughter. And such a shameful thing. And the sons of Marichi began to laugh. Because of that laughter, they took birth as demons. Because he's, well, Brahma is a great personality, so even he may commit some mistake, we still have to forgive him. Because anybody in this material world can be bewildered. By their laughter, they got cursed to become the sons of one great big demon named Kalanemi, who was another son of Hiranyakashipu. And they were Kam, Crow, Lobe, Mo, Mud, and Matsarya, our old friends. Our best friends. Kam, Crow, Lobe, Mo, Mud, and Matsarya. So they went out and they worshipped, they circumvented their grandfather, Hiranyakashipu, and they began to worship Lord Brahma. Hiranyakashipu, he found out that they were going behind his back. So he became furious and he grabbed them all and cursed them that you will be born and killed by your own father. So all of the, so this Kalanemi, he became Kams, and all these six sons, they all were born and killed by Kams, according to the curse of Hiranyakashipu. But this is the first thing we have to kick out. These things from our heart, Kam, Krodh, Lobh, Moh, Mad, and Matsarya, they had to be kicked out from our heart first. So Devaki, she was always afraid of Kamsa. Like Prabhupada says, a devotee, he's naturally afraid of material existence. Kamsa represents material existence. And that fear of material existence kicks out all of these six bad habits from our heart. So then next to appeared was Mahasankarshan, Balaram. Because Balaram, he's Adi Guru. So Guru's business is to make a nice place in our heart for Krishna to come. So first he came in Devaki's womb to make nice place. Now Krishna is going to come, so he has to come there, make everything nice, and all these Kam, Krodh, Lobh, Moh, they have been all kicked out. Now Lord Balaram appeared. So then Krishna called Yogmaya, and he told her that now you transfer this garb to Rohini there in Braj. And he called her Om Mahabhagi. He called her most fortunate, because she thought, well, you know, Lord Balaram, he's holding up the whole universe. I'm going to pick up that person. You know, you're telling me to take this womb, this embryo, you know, but he's the one, that's Mahasankarsha, he's holding up the whole universe on his head. And I'm supposed to say, no, Mahabhagi, I will give you the energy. You don't worry. Krishna used this word, Mahabhagi. He told Yogamaya, you don't worry, I will give you the energy. Now, Radha Govind Maharaj, he explains a nice story that one great acharya has written. And then he said, because of his being transferred, he'll become known as Sankarshan. Just like we know Krishna comes from all attractive. And the word for attractive is not Krishna, it's Akarshan. But in Sanskrit, funny things happen. So that Riya, when it becomes in another sense, it becomes, you know, Ar. Like that, so that from Akarshan comes Krishna, and Sankarshan means complete attraction. Anyway, Sankarshan, because he'll give pleasure to all his family members, he'll be known as Ram, and because he'll be very strong, he'll be known as Baladev. So one great acharya has explained that here Krishna has given the names of Balaram, because somebody may get doubt. Since Balaram is the older brother and Krishna is the younger brother, so who's supreme? But we see whenever the child is born, then, you know, they call the astrologer, then all the elders sit and decide what is going to be the name of the child. It's an elder person who decides, a senior person. They decide. They call the astrologer, then they see the time was this and nakshatra was this, so name should begin with ka, ka, ga, like this. They decide. You know, so it's a senior person who decides. So therefore, so no one will get any doubt, Krishna, he gave the names. So he's the senior. Although Balaram is appearing as older brother, he's the senior because he gave all the three names to Yogamaya before. So he gave the name, so he must be the senior position. This is just to make sure anybody has no doubt. So that garb was transferred to Rohini's, and everyone understood that Mother Devaki had miscarriage. Then, we know Vasudeva was meditating, and he saw Lord within his heart, and that form from his heart went into the womb of Devaki. And then Krishna appeared there, within the womb. And then she began to shine like anything. Even Kamsa was seeing his sister is shining like anything. He became worried. He was like, Kamsa was completely Krishna conscious. I'm envious. Wish I could think of about Krishna. I mean, Kamsa, he was just 24 hours a day, eating, sleeping, walking, anything, drinking. He was just thinking of Krishna. One time his guards came, their little tray with a couple of glasses of nice drinks, and Kamsa's eye, something glittered. And his eye caught, and he saw something coming, and water also reflects, and silver goblet also reflects different colors. And then he just became so upset. He said, "Guards, guards, those two rascals have come, Krishna Balaram, they've come, kill them, kill them, kill them, get them, guards." And the servant said, "Wait a minute, we just brought some cold drinks for you, man." Just like we come, because the weather's not so hot yet, but when you get to Vrindavan now, you're just, there's something to drink, there's something to, there's water for a We're wandering around Vrindavan, you're seeing the wonderful places that Krishna is passing. Only two things: where's the bathroom and where's something to drink? But Kamsa, he was seeing something to drink, and he was seeing Krishna and Balaram. Then they brought nice tray of foodstuff with all different little silver katoras and glasses and different colored preparations. Again, Kamsa, he saw something glittering. Guys, guys, kill him, Krishna and Balaram, those rascals, kill him, kill him. I said, "Hey, Maharaj, we just brought your food, you know. You know, when we see that nice gulab jamun, that big bowl of sweet rice, we don't necessarily remember Krishna or Balaram, you know." But Kamsa, even seeing food, he was seeing Krishna and Balaram. Then Kamsa's got two wives, Asti and Prati. So they decorated themselves up very nicely with all makeup and shringar and crown and so many things. They came before their Lord. immediately he saw two beautiful forms coming. He said, "Are those two have come, kill them, Krishna Balarama, come, kill them, kill them." I said, "Are Maharaj, it's like your wives, Asti and Prati." So, I mean, when we see our wife, we don't necessarily think about Krishna. But comes to you, see his wife, he saw Krishna and Balarama. So he was completely Krishna conscious. Anyway, but is Krishna conscious not accepted as bhakti because he was only thinking how to kill Krishna and Balarama? So, finally that day came, and it was completely midnight, all the guards fell asleep. Krishna appeared in his Chaturbhuj form in front of Vasudeva and Devaki, and then they prayed so many prayers, and they said, "You please conceal this form." Then he became a little child. And then somehow or other, all the chains opened up and all the doors opened up automatic. Just like Radha Govind Maharaj, first time somebody invited him to go to America to speak on Bhagavatam. So he got to the airport, because he never flew before. Anyway, he flew to an airport. Then he saw the door. He saw somebody walked out the door. Then the door closed. Then he was looking, you know, how do you open the door? Just this glass door is there. There's no handle. There's no button. He was just... Now what do I do, you know? And somebody else walked, and as soon as that person walked in front of the door, door automatically opened. He grabbed his bags and ran out the door. So like this, automatic, all the doors just ping, ping, ping. Like the airport, all the doors opened up. And Vasudev... Now, interesting little thing. Does it come to way about the 60th or 70th chapter in the 10th canto? It's an interesting thing because there it's talking about when Krishna and Balaram came back from Ujjain after staying in the ashram of Sandipani Muni, and they heard how Sandipani Muni asked for Dakshina and he brought back his dead son. So Devaki was a little upset. "Well, for your guru you did this, what about me? I had six sons and they're all gone." So then Krishna, he called, and those six sons appeared, and the sloka says that immediately upon seeing them, milk began to flow from her breast, and they drank that milk, and drinking the prasad milk of Krishna, they all got liberated and went back to the spiritual world. So then the question comes, well, Krishna was drinking the milk of Mother Yasoda's breast. So how was Mother Devaki's breast milk Mahaprasad? So in the Tika, in his commentary, Sanatana Goswami says that it's when Krishna told Vasudev, "You have to carry me to the other side of the Jamuna to Gokul." Then Mother Devaki was worried. He just got born. He hasn't had anything to eat. So then she fed him some milk from her breast, so he won't be hungry on the way to Gokul. So this is a tricky little thing we learn. We don't learn way, but somewhere in the very end of 10th canto, this little sweet thing is there. So then, there was nothing around to carry the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We should have a nice, you know, golden car with nice velvet and so many nice things. All Vasudev had was just this thing, you know, they use for, you know, you see in Braj, you go and you see them, they're throwing or here even you throw the rice or the wheat up in the air and the chaff blows away. Just a little, this is just a thing, you know, you just throw on the side of the road. It's not a very clean or very important thing. But this is all Vasudev had. So he just took the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was riding in this little basket like this. So, and it was, of course, raining. And Anantashesh appeared and shaded them from the rain. Then they got to Jamuna, it's rainy season. That first, second month of rainy season is Bhadra. So Jamuna was very full of water, and Vasudevi entered in, and water kept coming up and up and up and up. And you can see, of course, it's just way down the ways from Bisramghat, there's a place where Vasudevi entered the river Jamuna, and the water was coming up and up and up and up, and finally it was coming up over his head, and he was lifting that basket, and he was koi milalala lelo, koi lo, koi lo, koi milalala lelo, koi lo, koi lo, koi. So that became known as koi lagat. He was saying, please take my child. Who will take my child? Someone please, koi lo, koi lo, koi, koi lo, koi milalala lelo, koi milalala lelo, koi lo, koi lo. So that place became known as koi lagat. Because he was saying, please take my child, take my child. So then Krishna, he put his foot and touched the Jamuna. Then immediately, as soon as Jamuna got the touch of lotus feet of Lord, then she immediately came ankle deep, and Vasudev, he went across the river and exchanged the children, brought back Mother Yasoda's daughter. And then we know in the morning comes all of a sudden automatic again, click, 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 just like the airport, all the doors closed, automatic, and the shackles came, and then somebody heard the crying. They told Kamsa. Kamsa came there. Now he knew this is the eighth one. He was slipping. Sometimes he was falling. Somehow he got there. Devaki was saying, it's a girl, it's a girl. Let me have this girl. And still he was such a demon. He grabbed that girl child from Devaki and went to smash her. And then she slipped out of his hand and said, you fool, the child will kill you. He was already born somewhere else on this earth. Like that. Then Kamsa, he was completely destroyed. Now what have I done? I was such a demon. He began to cry. Somehow Vasudeva was so noble, he forgave him. Then he let them out of jail, and he just was, oh, what did I do? I got so confused. Because someone who's completely addicted to sense gratification, always confused. So this is the Jamastan. Beautiful temple is there. There's so many paintings on the ceiling. You can see also they have paintings of some trees there. And you can see the trees are all different demigods staying there in the form of trees. Just like we get to Radhakund, we'll hear about how the Pandavas stayed there in the form of trees. So there you can see. And all different leaders. So beautiful. Huge monster temple. So many beautiful paintings. And Ras Leela and Holy Leela and so many wonderful paintings are there. And then on one side, it has all the Astasakis. There's pillars. On each one of the pillars is all the Astasakis, and on the other side is all the Astasakas, Madhu Mangal and Stoka Krishna and Arjun Saka and like that. All the Astasakis and Astasakas. Very interesting. And as soon as you enter that temple, there's a little temple of Lord Jagannath, and behind there's Lord Chaitanya standing against a Garuda Stambha taking darshan of Lord Jagannath. Then you come, there's a big temple of Keshav Dev. Now this Keshav Dev deity, of course the original is gone, and it's completely gone. It went to somewhere in the rural side of Kanpur someplace. And we went there, in Ardakum in 95, we went there, and Bhujari was just crying because somebody had stolen the deity, so that deity is no longer around. But we found Haridev. 2 kilometers down the road was the deity of Haridev from Govardhan. But the original Adi Keshav Dev deity is gone. But that deity, Mahaprabhu came there, he began to dance in ecstasy in front of that Keshav Dev deity. And all the people were astounded, and they saw that this person, he's just like our Brajananandan, except he doesn't have blackish color, he has golden color. And when Brahman was there, hearing the Lord chanting, he also began to dance and cry, and they were both chanting and chanting, and he began to shiver and manifested all different types of ecstatic symptoms. Then Mahaprabhu was very astounded to how this person is showing so many ecstatic symptoms. So then he asked this Brahman, who are you? So he was a Sanodiya Brahman. So he explained that he was the disciple of Madhavendra Puri. As soon as Lord heard that he was the name Madhavendra Puri, he dove at this person's feet, and that person, he was stopping Lord. No, no, no. He was trying to touch the Lord's feet. And he said, you please explain your behavior. You're a sannyasi, I'm a householder. He said, no, no. Then he explained, then Balabhadra, who was with Mahaprabhu, explained that, no, he's the disciple of Ishwar Puri, so you're just, Mahaprabhu said, yes, you're just like my spiritual master. And then Mahaprabhu told that I will come. Then that Brahman said, you please come to my house, and your Balabhadra, he can cook. And Lord said, why Balabhadra should cook? You cook. Because Sanodiya means he's a lower caste Brahman, and sannyasis you're not supposed to take. He said, if Madhavendra Puri has eaten from your house, then I also can taste from your house. So then Mahaprabhu went to that Sanodiya Brahman's house, and they took prasad and cooked by his own hand at that house. So anyway, I think it's almost 1:30, isn't it? And my voice is also finished. So I think we'll stop here a little early so that we can save our voice for the rest of the course. Unless, of course, there's any questions.
You were saying that those children of the bird, and that they would be killed by their own father?
Yeah.
And so it was Kamsa?
Yeah, it was Kalanemi.
I've heard before, and I didn't read it anywhere, just the devotees, some devotees told me one time that they thought maybe giant Vijay had some appearance in the... in those pastimes, and they were thinking it was Kamsa. Whoever told them, said this. Did they have any appearance in the pastimes?
I can't remember if Kamsa was one of their appearances or not. I don't remember. Yeah. That's right. And? Was question backside? Yes? Anyway, somehow they did. This is all part of the Lord's plan. Okay. So we'll meet again and pray that my voice comes back. But the weather is nice and warm here. Warmer than Kumbh Mela, so. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.